Welcome to the Daily Actor Podcast. I'm Lance Carter, and I'm talking to you inside of a closet. That's right, I'm inside of a closet. I'm trying to get the best sound on this mic. If you've listened to some of the past podcasts, it sounds like I'm in the middle of like a train station or something. So we'll see how this one sounds. Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, is touring the country, and I recently talked with one of its stars, Wade McCollum. Wade plays Tick slash Mitzi in the musical that has him doing these massive costume changes in like 20 seconds. I can barely get my pants on in that amount of time, so that's a feat right there. We had a really nice conversation, especially toward the end where we talked about auditioning. He used the term, a healthy amount of so what is needed when you audition, and I couldn't agree more. Most of the parts I've gotten, and Wade too, is when I've been rushed or too busy to be nervous. I'm not talking not to prepare, but prepare and then not care. It's really wonderful advice, and you'll hear about that and life on the road, being a New York actor, and a lot more. And now it's plug time. If you need a website, casting director mailing labels, career coaching, list of headshot photographers in your area, we've got all that and more. And our stuff won't kill your bank account. You can find all of that out on dailyactor.com. And now, here's Wade.
Where are you right now?
We are in Houston.
Nice, I guess. How was that?
It's wonderful. the show has gone to Dallas and Austin, and so we're sort of familiar with Texas, and that Houston is very much in line with the rest of the state. It's just super welcoming and enthusiastic and great hospitality and lots of support for the arts, which is really cool.
I love Austin, man. I go there every year for their South by Southwest festival.
Amazing city.
Yes. Yes. Now, do you...
They have a petition to have us back, but we can't.
Yeah. Now, do you especially like Austin and, you know, Houston and all of Texas, do you go for like the local food, like the Tex-Mex and, you know, like the ribs and everything?
Yeah, I mean, I have in the past. I'm eating very strategically right now for health reasons.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not in that particular mode. I'm only eating very specific things, but I'm enjoying the South as much as I can.
Yeah. Is this your first tour?
Yeah.
How do you like it?
I love it. I mean, you know, it took a few months to adjust. I grew up on the road in my early childhood, so I have kind of a gypsy heart. But, you know, as you age, one gets into patterns. I've kind of been on the road my whole life, but I usually spend a lot longer than a week in each place I live in. You know, at least a few months going show to show. So, you know, you do a contract and it's at least 3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. But the week-to-week thing, without a day off because you travel on your Monday, it took a lot of getting used to, just like the rhythm of life. And also, you know, how to get to a new city and find a new network, you know, a new health food store, a new yoga studio, a new gym, and the pattern of how to get from place to place. It just took a lot of mental energy to kind of, you know, adapt.
Yeah.
But once I got the rhythm of it, I've been having a real blast.
How long did it take you to get that rhythm?
I mean, I'd say a couple months at least.
Wow.
You know, also how to stay healthy, because the amount of energy that you're putting out, and you're meeting, you know, 100 new people in every city you go to with new dressers and new everything. Plus the weather was really cold. We started in January in Minneapolis.
Oof. That's,
yeah.
That's not the place you want to go in January.
No.
So, you know, the show looks like a freaking blast. I mean, both for like the audiences and for you guys on stage. I mean, is it that way, or is it just I'm sure it's just tremendously hard work as well. I mean, you got to be exhausted by the time the show's over.
Yeah, it's definitely a mix of exhilaration and exhaustion. The audience, they're always so crazy enthusiastic. You know, it's like a sort of like a rock concert response at the end, and so we, you know, I tend to walk out of there pretty pretty exuberant because of the audience's energy, which is awesome. But you know, my body definitely notices that I just danced around in crazy shoes for 2 hours with heavy things on my head.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a mixture. It's a mixture.
And you know, I've seen some of the costumes, and not only, I mean, they look fantastic, but completely, I guess, intricate. You know, like it would take me, I need a math degree just to figure out how to get into some of them. But you have like these costume changes that take what, 20, 30, 40 seconds or something?
Yeah, there are a few that are 30 seconds from full, you know, full boy to full blown. It's, you know, drag, I guess, is the word, but some of these don't even feel like drag costumes. They just feel like kind of these alien, these beautiful alien creature costumes. And they certainly transcend costume in a lot of ways. A lot of times they're like feats of whimsical engineering, where it's like we're wearing small buildings or emergency shelters. And they do more than a costume should. They do all, they have all sorts of tricks and stuff. It's a blast. It's fun to be a part of it.
So when you go off stage, do you just like stand there and have people just fly, and your clothes just fly off and they fly back on you? I mean, how does the 30-second costume changes work?
Yeah, the quick ones is definitely like being a race car driver. You know, you just run off stage. And I think during the Gumby change, I have 1, 2, 3, 4. I have 4 people on me, so, you know, including makeup and hair. Well, I guess it's not really hair, it's flowers. But, you know, between all those people, yeah, I pretty much do just stand there. I mean, I'm doing my lipstick. You know, that's the hardest part, is getting your lips in a 30-second change while you're being kind of jostled around. They're putting your shoes on and your costume on. You're supposed to be doing your lipstick without, you know, smearing it all over your face. That's become kind of a, you know, a certain way of working.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, those are definitely like being a race car driver. You just kind of have a pit stop, and then people change your tires, and then you get pushed back out on stage. But some of the other ones, yeah, you know, you're definitely more proactive. You're kind of doing it.
How are you keeping your voice in shape?
I do my exercises every day, you know, sing for 20 minutes every day, and, you know, and just stay mindful. The challenge is extracurricular activities. You know, I go back to New York, I shoot the different, like, web series, a TV show, and I'm yelling or doing something in that that is compromising my voice, and then having to put it back together and making sure that the show is a priority. Or, you know, I'm doing a concert coming up, so I'm learning all this music during the day and then doing the show at night. So, you know, you just have to stay mindful and know where your limits are. And, you know, when you get to feel tired, know when to stop.
You sound tremendously busy. I mean, do you like this sort of busyness, you know, like doing one thing here and one thing there, flying back to New York?
I thrive in it, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you got to have your breaks, you've got to have your rest, but I love the challenge of finding the relaxation within the crazy busy. And, you know, it comes in waves, so I always feel like, you know, if it's pouring, take it on, you know, do it all. It's hard for me to say no. You know, there was a period of time a couple of years ago where I was doing 18 shows a week. I was doing a one-man show and a two-person show back-to-back at 2 different theaters. So I was running from theater to theater.
Good Lord.
And, you know, during the weekends, I would have, you know, 5 shows a week, 5 shows a day. And, and, you know, it was a one-man show and a two-person show, so it was never, there's no off-stage time. So that was sort of like being an Olympic athlete. And I like doing that every once in a while, setting the bar really high. you know, doing something that seems just absolutely crazy and pulling it off and learning from it, you know, learning about limitation and learning about, you know, what's possible, and then applying that to your next schedule and what you think is possible. So, yeah, I love being busy. That's the short answer.
Well, you know, speaking of busy, I read that the day the day you auditioned for this show, Priscilla, you had 5 other callbacks.
Yeah, that was one of those New York days. I just done an off-Broadway show, and you know, it got a fair amount of attention, and I was going in for a ton of stuff. Plus, it was just like a busy time. The fall was sort of like a busy time in New York. If you're in the city and you're auditioning, you've got plenty of things to audition for. And so, you know, my agent and I were scheduling a ton of meetings and auditions and stuff. And it just, yeah, it just so happened that during this one week in, I don't know what it was, September, I guess. Yeah, September, early October, that I had, like, you know, it was like an audition and then a callback and then another callback and then a dance callback and then a meeting. And Priscilla was in couched with in one of those days and was one of those callbacks, and the dance callback was later that evening. So, yeah. And, you know, the anecdote goes that the first callback was for this, you know, kind of the wife abusing logger. And so I was wearing flannel and my construction boots and had a full beard. And you know, the poor woman in the audition with me, I had to, like, the director was very hands-on, so he wanted me to really, you know, toss her around a bit. And so it was, you know, a very intense audition with lots of yelling. And then I was, you know, it went longer than expected, and I had to run to Telsey, which is, you know, 10 blocks south. And so I ran into the bathroom and had to shave off the full beard and do a superhero change in the bathroom. And went into Priscilla in my, you know, skinny jeans and funky shoes and tank top, and did that, and then ran to Rock of Ages. And the Rock of Ages costume could be very close to the Priscilla costume because it's glam rock. And then, you know, and I went to the dance callback for Priscilla, which was really fun. So, yeah, you know, it's like, count your blessings. Days like that in New York are the best. You know, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing in the city, which is being crazy from place to place, transforming and giving your gift.
Yeah. Your backpack must be huge that you carry around the city. Good Lord.
Yeah, you can always tell an actor because they've got, like, you know, all their shit with them because the city is structured in such a way that you have to take it home. I mean, you have to take it with you if you can't. Usually you don't have time to commute back home and then back down to Midtown, so yeah, they're super heavy with your yoga mat and your 3 different outfits and your binder full of music. And, you know, that's the other thing. They send you 3-4 songs plus a bunch of sides from the play. So the amount of material that you're learning in a short amount of time is pretty uncanny. That's why those bursts of being very busy and pushing your limit as an actor, as an artist, I think are really important because it shows you what you're capable of, so that when it comes to a week like that or a day like that where you see, oh my gosh, this is a marathon day, you know, you've done that.
Yeah.
You've done some comparable, so you have techniques to arc your energy, to, you know, how to meditate or preserve energy in between different callbacks and manage anxieties and, you know, the stress. So, you know, I think that's a huge part of our career is just stress management.
You know, and I think, I know when I have busy days like that, I'm nowhere near, I've had, like, you know, 2 auditions in one day, but, like, when you, like, something like that, you're rushing around and doing so many things that you don't have time to think, you know, so you just go on the audition, and I think those are when you have your better auditions, I would think.
That is so true, and that's absolutely true, that's a huge part of it, is, like, it's not the, not that you don't care, but the healthy sprinkle of so what is always is always a key to lots of different things, but especially booking work, because, you know, in a way, especially in New York, it's, you know, you just have no fucking idea what the case is. They might not even be really looking for that role. They might just be curious to see more of what you do, you know, for a different project. You don't even know what's going on, so I think a good amount of so what is helpful for sure. It creates relaxation, and, you know, nobody wants a needy actor.
yeah, healthy amount of so what is brilliant, yes. At what point, I know you went to an acting, you left high school early and you went to this acting conservatory. Did you leave for New York immediately after that?
No, I was, it's so funny, I just taught a few master classes at my conservatory last week. And it was so weird, or great, I don't know what the word is. It was amazing to kind of tell my story to the kids who were, you know, in my shoes back then. And sort of talk about the career path, because it's so, mine in particular, is very circuitous and non-linear and really great, you know, filled with synchronicity and all sorts of just life. You know, I've always been career-driven, but the short answer is no, I didn't go to New York right after conservatory, because I was 19 and I'm, you know, I'm a really sensitive dude, and I still am very wide open and sensitive, and a lot of my teachers really suggested that I didn't go directly to New York, which I took as like a blow to my talent. You know, I thought they were saying I wasn't ready, but that was clear. They were very clear that it wasn't about my abilities, it was about just life, you know, that I was too innocent in a lot of ways, and they're absolutely correct. And, you know, I was sort of hurt, but in retrospect, it was the absolute correct decision. I think it would have killed my spirit had I gone to New York too early. I didn't get there until I was 30, and it was the perfect time to walk into that particular market as an actor. I spent 12, 15 years working professionally and nonstop on the West Coast. You know, LA to Portland was pretty much my network. Mm-hmm. And I was blessed enough to go from job to job and was doing phenomenal projects. And, you know, I really got the opportunity to cut my teeth and do incredible work, and have a really, really strong sense of who I am as an artist and who I am as a person. And, you know, I lived a lot. I traveled a lot. I, you know, did all those things. So when I got to New York, I was really more capable of taking on the challenges that that city gives you, because it is a very challenging place to be. And at that point, I was hungry for the challenge so that I could grow. It was like I went consciously as a self-evolutionary step. It was like going to the gym, the spiritual gym, the artistic gym. It was like, okay, this is going to push me way past my comfort zone on all sorts of levels. And specifically, I really wanted to get better, you know, as an actor. I felt like I'd sort of plateaued, and that, you know, I knew that the people in New York were the top of the top, and that if I was going to be in that community, I would need to step it the fuck up. And sure enough, I was totally correct. And, you know, the first couple of years was really just about remembering how to audition and, you know, cultivating things that I hadn't done for a very long time, like auditioning, and also just, you know, amp up my skill set and see a ton of incredible theater and, you know, and learn. So I feel really great about the life path that, you know, took me to New York City.
Do you have any, like, I don't know, audition, like, nightmare stories?
Oh my God. Nightmares. You know, it's funny. I'm sure I do, but off the top of my head, I can't think of anything. I really tend to... I tend to not look at anything really as a nightmare. It's just kind of built into my personality. I don't know, sometimes those situations are like where the juice is, you know? So in retrospect, a lot of times I'm like, wow, that sucked. But then I'm always like, oh my God, I'm so glad that happened because I learned this, you know?
Yeah.
So I can't even think of a nightmare story. I know there are. I mean, there's just like tons of cliche auditions where you just walk in and the person doesn't even look up. You know, they don't even.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's to be expected. It's not a nightmare. That's just sort of auditioning 101. It's like, well, whatever. And that's where the so what comes in. I think it's like the challenge is to not become jaded or expect non-enthusiasm. I think it's to be, the practice is to be fully present with what's actually going on and non-judgmental, you know, don't project that person who's not looking up has cast me before, you know?
Yeah.
So it's impossible to know what's going on and why sabotage yourself and be like, oh my God, this is a nightmare. They're eating their sandwich and they're not listening to me. And because if you self-sabotage and think that that's what's happening and you consequently turn off and bail and suck, then yeah, you're not going to get the job. But if you do something unexpected, create an event, galvanize your light, whatever you want to do, whatever you call it, anything could happen.
And then finally, my last question, what's your advice to actors?
Oh my God. You know, I have a lot of advice for actors, but I think my number one advice is happiness. You know, I think as a precept for being an actor, obviously for being anybody, but especially an actor, especially an expressive, performative artist, I think your own personal happiness, satisfaction, well-being, all those things are paramount to your success. That, you know, nobody wants to hire a miserable human being who loves to complain. And, you know, there are plenty of those that do get jobs, and it's not, you know, not impossible, but why not cultivate happiness, you know? And I think if you look at a lot of the, you know, the series regulars on television shows and, you know, I've asked casting directors what sort of catapults an actor into the next genre of success. And I think, you know, a lot of times the answer is happiness. And, you know, when you walk in the door and you're genuinely, autonomously happy. And I mean, happiness that's not about your smile. You know, you're deeply satisfied. You live, the happiness is a fruit of a balanced life. So you have, you know, a beautiful life outside your craft as well. Then not only do you have a healthy dose of so what, because you're happy no matter what, you're fun to be around, you know? And I think that on a very base level, a casting director is like, do I want to hang out with this person? Will they fit within the culture of the, you know, groups that we're creating? And so, you know, I think that's, as a precept to actors, I think that's like one of the number one keys to everything. Plus, it's really awesome. It's an awesome thing to do in real life. Just, you know, cultivate happiness, and hey, you can spend the rest of your life working on it.
Thanks, Wade, and thank you guys for listening. Keep coming back to Daily Actor for more great interviews, news from film, TV, and theater, and so much more. Follow me on Twitter @DailyActor and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/DailyActor. Thanks for supporting the advertisers. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.